You're listening to this week's sermon from Saanich Baptist Church in Victoria. To watch the sermon online or for more resources, head to saanichbaptist.org. Have a great week.
It's really wonderful to be with you all here. As many of you know, this is our family's first Christmas in Saanich. And it's very, very cool to not have ice and snow to deal with. We move from the interior and everybody plays up this whole white Christmas thing, and snow's great until about 1 p.m. on Christmas Day, and then you want it gone. It just makes everything harder. I've really enjoyed being able to go out, and I'm a runner. I know you all knew that, and obviously I'm a runner. And but to go out for a run and not have to contend with what winter often brings. That ice, that snow, because when I go out, which is fairly early in the morning, it is just dark. Not all year round. You know, between 6 and 6:15 in the summer, you can have a clear, brisk, even warm day. But this time of year, it's difficult to get out there. It's difficult to get out for a run. And when you're out there, it can get dangerous and even treacherous. You might slip and fall. You might get lost. There's all of these different things to contend with. For me, running is taught me a lot about life. It's one of those things that kind of gives a metaphor that I kind of helps me understand where I'm at and how things are playing out in my life. It's one of the ways I filter my understanding of myself. And I was out a few years ago. It was right in the middle of COVID. It was Christmas 2020. You remember that one? I'm glad you don't. I don't want to bring it up. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It was that year. It was just, we were done with it, right? We'd been dealing with COVID for about 10 months. We were told that we would need to continue to socially distance, to stay within our bubble, to contend with kind of this overwhelming despair and depression that had come over the whole earth. And then it was dark. December came, and it's just dark all the time. I remember getting up one morning to go for a run and check the weather app on my phone. It told me it was a very cold day. And so I was like, okay, fine, I just got to get out, I just got to do it, because sometimes you just got to force yourself. And I remember getting all my gear on and heading outside, and even though it was cold, there was something special happening. It was bright, it wasn't daylight, but there was a full moon, and I could see almost clearly. It was one of my favorite runs, because I knew I wouldn't have to contend with slipping and falling or getting lost. It was just a chance to plod my way down the road and just think and pray and just be. It was a gift I think God gave me in that ugly December. It became clear to me that morning, or I was reminded anyways, that God always comes in the darkest places at the darkest times. It's kind of how he does it, and he always comes bringing light. Light always comes first. At creation, he radiated light. In human history, he illuminates with light. And even today, he enlightens with the light of the gospel. That's what we celebrate at Christmas, is that Jesus came as God's light, and in that light was life for all men and for women. We're told in the book of Genesis, the very beginning of the story, that the earth was formless and void, that it was chaotic and empty and completely dark. Until God said, let there be light. And suddenly there was light. And the scripture says, and it was good. And the darkness could not overwhelm it. Interesting to me that the light came even before the sun and moon came. Even before God created those celestial beings, there was light. Because God is a God of light. And it was light that brought about chaos out of the disorder and beauty out of the emptiness. What God was doing was creating a space by which all of creation would exist, aware of his glory, aware with clarity about who he was and his goodness, because everything that he created was good. Into that, men and women were placed to live according to that order and according to that beauty, enjoying being in the light. We were created to live that way. Of course, if you know the story, it doesn't take long for humanity to choose a different type of direction. that the darkness, which was once temporary, where God said the darkness was there but could not overwhelm, it became permanent when first humans decided to go their own way, to reject the goodness of God and provide for goodness themselves. And upon disobeying him, had to run and hide away from his light. As at that point, the death entered into the world, a permanent darkness that would come imminently for everybody who ever lived. The other thing that happened is that men and women would prefer the dark, would prefer to continue to do their own thing in their own way, outside of God's light, outside of his truth, outside of his presence. They preferred the dark. Even in those dark moments, immediately after Adam and Eve sinned, God came and gave a promise that he would once again bring light into the world. And over the course of human history, he kept making that promise. The book of Numbers promising a Messiah would come and you would see a star. And the book of Isaiah prophesying that there is a great light coming for all of humanity. In the first century BCE, Augustus, the Caesar at the time, wanted to celebrate and commemorate Julius Caesar's reign. Julius Caesar was his adopted father, and he was held in high esteem by all of the people. And so he called for a games to come into Rome, a time for everybody, the wealthy, the great civilization of Rome, to come together and to just glory in Julius Caesar and have a games in his memory. It was at that time that a comet was in the sky. And as people are apt to do, they're to make spiritual conclusions about a celestial event. And so the people looked and said, that is Julius Caesar's soul becoming a god. Augustus, being a very politically savvy man, saw that that could be a powerful thing for his legacy and for his reign. And so he convinced the people that every Caesar was divine. That just like Julius Caesar, every human Caesar would become a god, so much so that he commemorated it on coins. Coins that on the one side had his face and on the other side had that comet, that star that was in the sky during those games. When he called the census that Jesus' parents, Mary and Joseph, went to Bethlehem to take part in, it was so that he could tax the people, so that he could take those very coins out of their hands. That every time they saw it and held it, they would be reminded, though, that he was God. That just like his forefather, a man would become God. Matthew's gospel tells us, though, that when Jesus was born, there was a star in the sky. Not to signify that a man could become God, but that God became a man. Matthew's gospel reversed the order of things, and that star was what led the wise men to the very place Jesus was. Matthew sees how God's story, how God's light illuminated history. John's gospel takes a whole different take. John's gospel tells Jesus' origin story under the perspective of the original creation story. John's gospel begins with this: in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. What's he saying? He's saying that when God said, let there be light, those words were what became flesh, that the Word became flesh and has dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. He says that that power that was evidenced in God saying, let there be light, had now been manifest in this child, and that to see Jesus is to see the light, and then to see the light is to see life. He says, in him was life, and this life was the light of men. John would go on to tell story after story about how Jesus communicated the clarity and beauty of God. He would communicate the truth and the grace that God existed in. Jesus came and he healed the diseased and the disfigured. He taught both the scholar and the child. He led both the loyal and the betrayer. He loved the sinner and affirmed the ashamed. And in him we see the life that we are created for, created to identify not with our circumstances, not with our race, not with our gender, but with this acknowledgement that we were created in God's image to be his children. Created with a purpose to reflect who God was to the rest of creation. That we are created for belonging, to live in harmony with one another and with God, to not fear the light, but live in the light. Jesus came, and in him was life, and this life was the light of men, and the darkness could not overcome it. The darkness could not overcome it. It's the promise that John spoke in John chapter 1. At the end of John's gospel, though, we see that darkness truly tries to. That it was the greed of the wealthy and the powerful that saw Jesus and his light as a threat. Now, we know that history tells us that the Jews and the Romans crucified Christ. The Bible also tells us that we participated in that when we rejected the light to live in the darkness. Jesus, being the true light and life, was a threat to the earthly power and the greed of men. And so they crucified him. As he was hanging on the cross, a very strange thing happened from noon to 3 p.m. That as he suffered there, the sky went completely dark, as though it was nighttime. And it must have been believed, even by John who watched that event take place, that the darkness had surely overwhelmed the light. When he gave up his spirit, Jesus' body was gathered and rolled up in cloth and then placed in a tomb, and that tomb was sealed shut. No light in it, within it at all. We see his body empty, void. We see him in the chaos of this tomb, but not for long, because the darkness was never meant to be permanent. 3 days later, Jesus' body breathes again. He comes out of that tomb and his eyes adjust to the brightness, and we see that it is true. The darkness has not overcome him. And Jesus being alive then and rising from the dead gives us this promise that he's alive now and still working now. That Jesus is still showing us that he is the light, and in that light is life. That in him is an identity far better than any other identity, a purpose far better than any other purpose, and a belonging that envelops us in an unconditional love that can never, ever be lost. This is what Jesus continues to do by enlightening hearts. A few decades after Jesus rose from the dead, Paul, a man who was once blinded by the very light and glory of Jesus, wrote these words. It says, "For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of the darkness,' has shone into our hearts the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." That God, who said, "Let there be light," gets into our hearts and speaks light into our hearts. What is that light? It's the knowledge of the glory of God, the grace and truth of God in the face of Jesus. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen that in him is light and is in light in his life. Making that connection between hearing the truth about who Jesus is and believing his grace is to see the glory of God with our own hearts, Paul says. Jesus is still coming and shining his light, and he's doing it in our hearts. That's what we celebrate at Christmas. That God didn't leave us in the darkness. That he didn't leave us in the despair and the hopelessness, the fearfulness of death, but that he came and he comes. Paul would speak to a church, he'd say, I pray that the eyes of your heart might be enlightened, in order that you may know the hope of his calling, and what is his wealth, what is the wealth of the glorious inheritance in you as saints, and what is the immeasurable greatness of his power towards you who believe. He says, I want you to your heart to be enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of his calling, of being called sons and daughters of God, of being brought into the light and not having to fear it, not having to run from it, not like Adam and Eve having to go and hide behind a bush and blame everybody else, but just to be there and be safe in the light. That's the hope of the calling, to be called his children. To know the wealth of his glorious inheritance in the saints, that wealth that is glorious is eternal, freeing us from having to hoard wealth here and be so protective of it against others. The wealth of his glorious inheritance in the saints shows us that our hope will finally be realized when we will one day be in his presence, be in his light, perfectly and peacefully for all of eternity. And that you'd know the immeasurable greatness of his power to you who believe. Believe what? Believe that Jesus' presence is right here, right now. To believe that his promises are still working and are still powerful. And that as we believe that, we can be freed. Freed from the darkness of sin and shame and death. Freed. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so you may know what is the hope of his calling, what is the wealth of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and what is the immeasurable greatness of his power to you who believe. That's why we need Christmas. We need to remember that Jesus came, that he comes, but he's coming. And this is a really powerful passage in the book of Revelation, the end of the Bible. Revelation 21, where we see this marriage between heaven and earth, where Jesus returns in full glory, that he blocks out the sun with his light and in fact illuminates the whole world so much so that there's no need for the sun and for the moon. When I was out on that run that day, I was thankful for the moon to give me guidance, to give me direction. I still had to be mindful, though, not to step on a patch of black ice and to know where I was going so that I could get home again. But slowly, slowly, the light of the moon gave way because a greater light was coming into the world. The sun was rising. And when the sun rose, there was clarity and there was warmth. It's this season that we celebrate the clarity and the warmth that is in Jesus. That we celebrate this now with a hope and an expectation that it will be fully and finally realized one day. Where we may not need to celebrate Christmas anymore because it won't be dark anymore. I don't know about you, but I need that this time of year. I need to know that God hasn't given up on me, he hasn't abandoned me, that he's still showing me who Jesus is and who Jesus is coming and how that will change everything. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pray. We're going to sing some more because you don't want to hear me talk anymore. We want to sing. And what we're going to do is allow you to just hold your candle and have your candle lit. It's going to be a very sentimental, sincere moment. And you can get caught up in the sentimentality, and that's okay, but even more than that, I just invite you to be curious. To be curious about how Jesus is continuing to spread the light of his grace and truth. And that as we sit there and take in the light in the room, as we listen to everyone sing, as we read and even follow along with our own words, the words on the screen, that the truth of the grace and truth would enlighten our hearts. That we would see, like Paul said, the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus. Let's pray. Lord, it is good to be in this place. It is good to be in your presence. It is good to hear your truth. It is good to fight to believe your grace. We all come into this season, we all come into December with various backgrounds, various traditions, various perspectives. We often demand this season, give us, though, what you've already given us. That in you we have a complete joy that can be never taken away. That in you we have a hope that will extend beyond this life and into the next. That in you we have a peace that transcends all understanding. That in you we have a love that can never be lost. Might that truth enlighten our hearts today? And might you give us the faith to believe. In your name and for your glory, amen.